Pleasant words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the bones. Welcome, everyone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, and this is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Kenneth Wong is our host. He's an author, teacher, and itinerant speaker. You know, there is power in a well-timed word. And fathers especially have the awesome responsibility of speaking into the lives of our children. If we speak positive words concerning our situations and ourselves, then we are speaking good things into our life and into the lives of others. The words of Solomon remind us that pleasant words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the bones. In a moment, Ken brings us part four of The Power of Encouragement.
Hello, everyone. It's good to be with you. We are now coming to the final fourth part of our series on the power of encouragement. I have dealt with what it means to be encouraged ourselves first in the first two parts. And then beginning from the third part yesterday, what it means to be encouraging toward others in turn. And we have dealt with three aspects from 1 Thessalonians chapters 4 and 5. And the three we have touched on are the motivation for being encouraging to others, and secondly, its meaning, and thirdly, the means of doing it. And for today, we are going to deal with another three aspects of what it means to be encouraging to others. Staying on in the letter of 1 Thessalonians, where there is one more point to be added on what it means to be encouraging. And this is our fourth point, the manner of encouraging others. And we find this in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 10 to 12. Let me read that to you. You are witnesses, and God also, how devoutly and justly and blamelessly we behaved ourselves among you who believe, as you know, how we exhorted and comforted and charged every one of you as a father does his own children, that you would walk worthy of God who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. I'm calling this the manner of encouraging because it says explicitly in verse 11, you know, this is the way we encouraged you. And how was that done? What's the manner in which Paul and his co-workers encouraged the believers in the young church in Thessalonica? Well, he says, you know, this is the way we encouraged you, as a father does his own children. Talk to them as a spiritual father to his own spiritual children. And you will find that this is the mark of good parenting, whether it's spiritual or it's natural. Whether it's parenting or mentoring or disciple-making, encouragement is the greatest need and the key success factor. As we have noted in the beginning, this is basically what encouragement means. The posture of getting alongside the one you're trying to encourage in order to exhort or to comfort or to charge or to implore. There's a need for a personal one-on-one instruction or exhortation or motivation. There's no shortcut to that, and there's no way around spending time and expending energy dealing with the person individually. And in order to do this right, there's the great prior need for holiness in ourselves. That is always the great prerequisite. As it says in verse 10, you are witnesses and God also, how devoutly and justly and blamelessly we behaved ourselves among you who believe. So if we are to be able to encourage others effectively, we have to be first devout and just and blameless in our own behavior. And only then can we do what he says in verse 12. To be able to exhort and encourage and warn others so that they would walk worthy of God who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. In other words, to direct them to God, not to ourselves. There is a great need for spiritual fathers and mothers in the church, much more than just instructors. And they are the ones who are able to do this, to exhort, to comfort or encourage, and to charge or to implore others to walk worthy of God by doing it like a spiritual parent. The great danger and tendency is to do the opposite of what we're supposed to do as a good spiritual parent or a mentor. and in doing so to rub the wrong way. Let me give you two instances in the New Testament where we are warned of the danger of a parent, whether natural or spiritual, in dealing with and speaking with their children in such a way as to hinder them rather than help them. First, in Colossians chapter 3, verse 21, it says, "Fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged." So here we have, first of all, an explicit warning against speaking or dealing with your children in such a way that they become discouraged instead of encouraged. And here is a second one in the Ephesian epistle, Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. "And you, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath or anger, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." So here again is a second warning or admonition against speaking or dealing with your children in such a way that brings out the worst in them rather than the best. Instead of getting inspired, they get angry. The whole manner in which we speak to or deal with people has tremendous influence for better or for worse. We can either stimulate them to do better, to try harder, or provoke them negatively to quit and to give up. So there we have the twin dangers which can lead to either resignation or retaliation if we speak disparagingly to them instead of encouragingly. Back to our passage in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 11. You would have noticed that different verbs are used. We exhorted, we comforted, we charged, we implored, we encouraged, implying that we may need to employ a different stance, almost use a different voice for different occasions or dealing with different people. But the focus there in that verse is every one of you. And everyone is different. And even with the same person, it may be a different condition or situation each time. And all this, therefore, requires much patience on our part. We need both gentleness as well as firmness. We need to deal with tenderness as well as toughness as the occasion or the type of person requires. There is also another related verse back in chapter 5 where we have been before, which brings this out in a very clear way and is directly relevant to the point we are dealing with right now. And that is the manner of encouragement. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 14, we read this: "Now we exhort you, brethren, warn those who are unruly, comfort the faint-hearted, uphold the weak, be patient with all." Here we find three distinct forms in which encouragement can take. It's almost like saying that encouragement can speak with a different voice in having to deal with these three different types of people. Who are they, and what should we do to really encourage them? To our surprise, it's not always with the same voice in the same way, although you're doing it basically in the same manner as a spiritual father or mother. Well, here is the first: warn. Warn those who are unruly. Now, the word warn there means to admonish or basically to put in mind. So in other words, when you warn or when you admonish somebody, you're trying to put some sense back into the mind of that person. You're trying to wake that person up. And why is that so? Because you're dealing with this kind of person. It's those who are unruly or idle, just loafing or idling around, never getting down to doing something serious. And so the real need for such people who are basically out of line is to get them back into line and get them back into step. And real encouragement is not endurance. It's coming alongside this person and trying to get this person to see and say, "Look here, if you keep going like this, if you keep going out of line, you'll soon go completely out of the way. You'll become wayward." So the purpose of that warning or that admonition is to put back in mind things that you might have said many times before and hopefully try to say it in such a way that it will reach home this time. And then secondly, we have this phrase in 1 Thessalonians 5:14. Not only warn those who are unruly, but to comfort the faint-hearted. So that's the second way, the second voice, to comfort or to encourage. Now, this word is very interesting because the word comfort is exactly the same one that we read just now in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 11, how we exhorted and comforted and charged every one of you. So the word comfort or encourage here actually and literally means to speak kindly. And we need to speak kindly, especially to this category of people, those who are disheartened or who are faint-hearted. And the word translated here, faint-hearted or the disheartened, literally means those with a small soul. And it's used only here. And that's an interesting word because it's descriptive of those people who are timid, those who lack courage. They're always fearing the unknown. They won't step out. They will not take risks. And they are constantly weighed down by worries of all kinds. So when you have to comfort or to encourage these kinds of people, you actually need to speak kindly to them in order to draw out those who are timid and afraid. And the third category we read in 1 Thessalonians 5:14 is this: warn those who are unruly, comfort the faint-hearted, and thirdly, uphold the weak. We need to uphold, to support, or to help. This means to lift up the ones who are weak. Those who are spiritually weak are those who keep faltering in their faith. They may have a very weak conscience and have many kinds of spiritual scruples of all kinds of minor things. They major on minors. And there are also those ones who are weak because they keep stumbling in sin. They are constantly defeated. They never seem to be able to have the victory or to overcome. So for these, we need to encourage by upholding them in prayer, as well as support and help them by constantly engaging them in counsel and showing them how it can be done. And in order to do all these, we need that last component: be patient with all kinds of people, with all kinds of distresses and discouragements. And sometimes when we have to deal repeatedly with all these kinds of cases, we just fall into a state of exasperation, and we can fully identify with Paul, and we ask, who is sufficient for these things? Well, thanks be unto God, through Jesus Christ, we learn to be patient with all. Patience is a commodity in really short supply, but in great demand. Well, we are all our brothers and our sisters' keeper in the body of Christ, so we should watch out for their spiritual well-being. Just like siblings or members of the same natural family unit would look out for each other's well-being. Let's now move on from 1 Thessalonians to the book of Hebrews. And here we find a fifth aspect of what it means to be encouraging to others. And I will simply call this modeling. We need to model what it means to be an encourager. We will read about this in Hebrews chapter 3, verse 13. And this is what it says: but exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. And with this, we are moving from the earlier consideration of looking forward at the prospect of that day, that is the coming again of Jesus, to the present, to today. And it says then in Hebrews 3:13 that we should exhort or encourage one another daily while it is called today. So this is something that everyone can do and that we should do every day. You'll find that this word today is a keynote in Hebrews chapters 3 and 4. And in fact, it occurs with reference to a quotation from the Old Testament. It's a line from Psalm 95, which is quoted three times within these two chapters. Today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as in the rebellion. So the context of that reference to today is a warning about not allowing our hearts to be hardened if we hear God's voice today. So in fact, this is what this program, Times of Refreshing, seeks to do every day. It's to encourage one another daily, as long as it's called today, so that we'll keep responsive to what God has to say and not allow our hearts or our consciences to be hardened, and so forfeit ourselves of all the great and precious promises that he has in store for us. Well, I call this fifth aspect modeling, because there is a great need to continually model encouragement daily, because it is so easy to just slip into sin through disobedience and not listening to God. Our conscience can get calloused or desensitized with repeated rejection and disobedience. And this is something we must never underestimate. And it works both ways, whether it's for obedience or disobedience, whether we are listening or rejecting. It gathers a cumulative momentum of its own, so that things are not neutral or they stay the same way as they have always been. It either gets easier to get close to God or it gets more difficult. While the exhortation in Hebrews 3:13 is lest any of you should be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. Sin deceives and it blinds us so that it becomes a blind spot which we do not see ourselves because we have so ingeniously rationalized and justified our own sin and disobedience. Satan and sin always work that way because Satan is a deceiver and sin deceives and blinds us to the truth. So this is why those who are found in sin, who are caught in sin, who are blinded, deceived and stuck in sin, need someone else to come and tell them and to show them by coming alongside them and speaking the truth in love. And the best way to encourage others in this way is not to settle for less in the struggle against sin, but to exude encouragement continually, wherever, whenever, or whatever we find ourselves in, and to help someone in a state of sin to see and to acknowledge his or her own sin and to turn back to God rather than away from God requires a judicious balance between forgiveness and firmness, between compassion and conviction, to have affection in dealing with such people as well as to deal with authority so that we actually shine the light of truth into the darkness of sin and not just commiserate with that person in their sin. That's no true encouragement which does not restore and direct that person back to God. That's no love without truth that does not help bring someone back on his or her feet, but instead gives that person more reason to drag his feet and to remain where he is. So encouraging in such a situation means to point out the sin and the wrong and to point back toward God with love and not judgment. The requirement on the part of the encourager is a continual state of inward rest, which comes from being rightly related to God all the time. The encourager lives a life that is characterized by less spiritual downtime and increasing spiritual uptime, so that there is less leakage and loss of opportunities for usefulness to God. We should always have time today for someone else in need of our attention and encouragement. Encouragement is not so much something you do first as something you are yourself. And when others see it in your life authentically, it will in turn inspire a desire to have what you have and to be what you are in Jesus Christ. The final and sixth aspect of what it means to be encouraging to others is what I call meeting. And we read about this in Hebrews chapter 10, verses 24 to 25. And let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting or encouraging one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. This is about spurring or stirring up one another or stimulating one another to love and to good works. Notice it's not about me doing good works and loving myself here, but it's to encourage others by stirring them up to love and to do good works themselves. When it comes to spurring or stirring up others, sometimes we do the opposite by stirring them up in a negative way, for example, to anger or indignation instead of inspiration. A spur is a device on the horse rider's boots in order to kick the horse into action and acceleration. It may be a temporary irritant, but it's needed to get moving. And so sometimes people need a nudge to gently kickstart them to love or to do some good works. So we need to employ spiritual spurs, like providing a stretch goal or a challenge or some opportunity. After we have showed them how to do it, it's now time to encourage them to try and see that they can do it themselves. It is possible for some people to have love without good works, or vice versa, to do good works without the genuine motivation of love. So in encouraging such, we need to emphasize one or the other according to the area of need or deficiency. In Hebrews 10:25, the context is about not neglecting the meeting or assembling together with other believers as a church or an assembly. And some do neglect this as a result of being discouraged, rather than being encouraged in the meetings in the church. So let's use the limited time window well in fellowship meetings or in church meetings, in order to build one another up, so that we make the meetings constructive and productive. We need to put on a collective mindset whenever we come together and assemble ourselves together, thinking more of how you can give and contribute, and not just what you can get and receive out of the meeting. The purpose of believers meeting together is to be encouraged and to encourage one another. It's a wonderful thing to have fellow brothers and sisters surrounding you, and they are like street lights which help to brighten the way and make it easier to walk, even though it doesn't actually make it any shorter. In any meeting, the ratio of encouragers to discouragers can make a big difference to the mood and the outcome of a meeting. But numbers are not all. It is power with God that counts. Remember that one with God is a majority. But this is not a call to act and to strike out on our own, but rather to lift up others instead of being dragged down when we are in a collective situation. Well, I hope through this series on the power of encouragement, you will understand and know the power of encouragement both personally from God and practically for others. So let's cultivate this as our predominant disposition. You can almost see this sign at every corner, encouragers wanted. So join the ranks and make a difference. And I trust you have been refreshed by God's presence and reached by His Word.
We need to continually model encouragement, because encouragement is not so much characterized by what we do, but it is something that we are. Thank you for that good word, Kenneth. This is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. And I invite you to join us again tomorrow for another reflection from God's Word. In the meantime, we'd love to hear from you. You can send us a text message and let us know what you think of the program. Send that to 94313813, or you can write with your views to Post Office Box 392, Thompson Road Post Office, Singapore 91571. You can also visit our Facebook page, and there you can get the latest updates on the program and also give us your views right on our Facebook page. I also invite you to visit our website, www.timesofrefreshing.asia, where you can listen to the program online. And Times of Refreshing has launched an iPhone app that allows you to directly access the broadcast messages and the podcasts right from your iPhone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, inviting you to join us again for Times of Refreshing.